Jimmy pledge allegiance.
This is KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Solar Oregon, presenting the Go Zero Tour, an annual open house style tour of net zero and path to net zero homes in Oregon on Saturday, October 4th from 1 to 4:30 p.m. Tickets and info at bit.ly/GZT2025.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 11 a.m. Next up is The Bike Show. Hello and welcome to the KBO Radio Bike Show, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon on 90.7 FM and streaming live on KBOO.FM. All our shows are archived also on www.bikeshowportlandtransport.com. My name is Alon Robb and I will be joined today by co-host Nedra Deadweiler, and our engineer is, as always, Ty Walker. And a big thank you to you, our listeners, for joining us today. We are happy to be carried by fellow community radio stations across the land, including Radio Tacoma and KORC Radio of Corvallis, Oregon, where our show is aired every other Sunday at noon. The station, streaming at KORCFM.com, is, in its own words, freedom local radio dedicated to playing great music and building community. We have had quite a few dramatic days in our city of Portland, Oregon, with the president intent on sending federal troops to Portland. He claims that it is, in his own words, a ravaged war zone, which reminds him of World War II, and that, quote, domestic terrorists are roaming the streets. For those of our listeners who are out of Portland and are worried about the dangers posed, the only crimes I saw in the last few days were on the football pitch during my weekly game when some of the skillful players on the other team dribbled past me. And another crime, Gino Nugget Bartali, the little four-legged family member and wonder, would bark the added crime of only getting a set number of kibbles and not a ball bursting with an endless supply. It's quite a nightmare to be under threat of invasion by our own government. So may that nightmare disappear, and the sooner the better. On a more cheerful note, we have another good show ahead with inspiring guests. In the first half, our guest is Carol Kachadurian, Executive Director of Double Tilde Core, an organization based in D.C., focusing on older adults' mobility and wellness. Carol has worked in transportation planning and operations for quite a while at both the city and regional levels, including school and community-based active transportation plans. In the second half of the show, Nedra will talk with Daniel Cheney and Joshua Funches, leaders of the National Youth Bicycle Council. The organization was started in 2017 by youth seeking to connect and encourage young people to be leaders in the cycling community. A warm welcome to you, co-host Nedra Deadweiler. How are you these days?
Doing all right over here.
Any federal troops outside your door?
No troops currently, and I also just want to affirm that you're not my enemy. No one in Portland is my enemy or Oregon. You're all of my friends.
Oh, I'm so relieved. For a minute, I thought I'm on your enemy list, and you'll boycott me or invade our city. So it's good to hear. And what's the weather like over there in Atlanta?
Oh, as a contrast, it's sunny today. We got some bright suns and fluffy clouds. Mm. So I send that to you as well.
And you participated in a wonderful art festival the last few days?
Oh, yeah. It's been art season, an art fair. Last weekend, the Goat Farm hosted Site, which is Site is a historic landmark. And all throughout the venue were indoor-outdoor installations, digital installations, music performances. Mm. And this coming week will be Atlanta Art Week. So it's just September, October is jam-packed with a lot of interesting sights to see and also great people watching and seeing folks you haven't seen in a long time.
And
yeah,
art,
I recommend it.
Art Week is what I want to see in Portland also, and not invasion and lies and BS, pardon my friend here. So I will say bye for now, and we'll reconnect at the half-hour mark.
Sounds great.
Yeah, take care. Before we speak with Carol Kachadurian, Executive Director of Double Tilde Core Collaborative, a few quick news items. And the first one, I'm still here with this nightmare we're facing. So, but this one is connected to bicycles. So in response to President Trump's threat to send military troops to Portland, Portland Mayor Keith Wilson said that Portland is a peaceful place. And in his own words, if President Trump came to Portland today, what he would find is people riding their bikes, playing sports, enjoying the sunshine, and buying groceries or produce from a farmer's market. And as BikePortland.org reported, as the mayor, governor, and other elected officials spoke during a press conference on the waterfront downtown, there was a constant stream of people walking, rolling, and bicycling on the path behind them. It was a perfect illustration of the wide gap in reality between Trump's version of Portland and the real thing. And for our listeners in Portland, consider attending today the weekly Bike Happy Hour held from 3 to 6 every Wednesday at Southeast Ankeny between 27th and 28th Avenue. And today, immigration rights activists will join in a community discussion. And as Jonathan Ma, the BikePortland.org publisher, wrote, they'll discuss their campaign, learn what to do if you see ICE agents in your neighborhood, and how bicycle riders and safe street activists can use the tools we have to make the community stronger in the face of rising federal aggression. Amen. So I'll move from the negative to positive. This is a story reported by the BBC about a project in Guatemala to give recycled bikes a new life as pedal-powered machines. For almost 20 years, the group Maya Pedal has been converting bicycle parts donated from abroad into bicycle machines. The NGO, based in the small town of San Andres Itzapa in the south of the country, was set up by residents and volunteers in 1997. At low cost and eliminating the need for electricity, the bicycles are turned into water pumps, grinders, threshers, tile makers, nutshellers, blenders for making soap and shampoo, as well as food, and trikes, trailers, and more. The bicycle designs are now available globally on the internet. And for more information about this wonderful project, you could check mayapedal.org. And we hope to have a member of Maya Pedal during a future show. And those were just two news items from the vast bicycle universe. And now it's time for our first guest, Carol Kachadurian, Executive Director of Double Tilde Core Collaborative, based in Washington, D.C., and the organization specializes in older adult mobility and wellness. Good day, Carol Kachadurian, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be on your show.
And we're happy and honored also. So before we get to your organization, I always like to ask people about their own cycling history. Were you always a cyclist? And what are some of your early cycling memories?
Probably my earliest cycling memory is the Christmas that I received a blue Huffy bike from my parents. My sister got one that was like it, and it certainly gave me more mobility within my neighborhood when I was playing and, you know, going places within my neighborhood. So that's my earliest memory. Certainly when I was in college, I had a bike, and I stopped cycling for a while when my children were young, but then started again. So I'm not unlike many older adults that complete the 50-plus cycling survey in terms of times in your life when you cycle and when you mm-hmm. take a break and then when you get back to it.
Hmm. And you live in Washington, D.C. You've worked for the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority for quite a while. What was, when you worked, I think it was between 97 and 2007, what was the state of cycling in the city then, and has there been a great change in the years that since?
Yeah, certainly there's been much more development of the bike network infrastructure, both in Washington, D.C. and the surrounding cities. Interestingly, I had a position with WMATA that serendipitously allowed me to connect with the cycling community, and we held two access to transit by bike and walking workshops with WMATA and surrounding communities that eventually led to the formation of the Access to Transit Office, which focused on biking, walking to get to the public transit. Remember, you may not know, but this was at a time when the first surface transportation bill called that established bicycle and pedestrian coordinators locally and at the state level really beginning to bear fruit in terms of the bike network locally. And the transit agency at that time didn't really pay much attention to connecting with the bike network around their rail stations or to bus stops. So the Office of Transit Access Programs helped to build those relationships, which have really borne a lot of good fruit since I left the agency about, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago.
Hmm. And since the city is, considered federal place, I mean, are the transportation and especially cycling funds, do they come from the national level, from local residents? I'm a little confused how that works with the city budget.
Yeah.
So how is the city run, actually?
Yeah, the city has its own taxing power and its own budget. Certainly, mm-hmm. there are a lot of federal dollars. And many people probably know that Congress has ultimate oversight over mm-hmm. the District of Columbia. So they are not unlike states and local governments, except for that congressional oversight of them.
Hmm. And would you say that currently the city council is pro-cycling? In Portland, we have four council members out of 11 who are definitely, you know, pro-cycling, pro-transportation, pro-human rights, and one of them, council member Tiffany Komoria Lane, will be on our show in January. But would you say that the city council is pretty progressive in Washington?
I think it's maybe average. A little disappointing. The mayor said no to a much discussed and planned to put bike lanes on Connecticut Avenue. From what I understand, because of pressure from people that didn't want to lose a travel lane, a motor vehicle travel lane, and businesses that were concerned about losing parking. And so they nixed that plan in favor of on-street parking, which is a little disappointing, particularly given that the city has a Vision Zero program. They also are getting rid of vertical separation between bike lanes and motor vehicle travel lanes. So I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. If we're going to begin to see some differences in levels, you know, like in the Netherlands, the street is at one level, the bike lane is up 6 inches, the sidewalk is up 6 inches more, which is what's happening from what I understand in other communities in the country. So that's a little disappointing. So I don't know. I don't know what to say.
Before we get to discussing the group, you're, you know, executive director, and just kind of curious if there are any individual or groups that have inspired you in your work, or do you have, in general, any role models, heroes, maybe?
Well, I think anybody that gets on a bike and rides is a hero for me, and particularly people who are older who continue to ride and are enthusiastic about it, make friendships, stay physically fit, support the development of bike networks and cycling in general. People that run bike shops that really do a wonderful job of supporting cyclists. When I was at the Oregon Active Transportation Summit earlier this year, a session featured four bike shops in Portland that each have kind of a different role in promoting cycling, and honestly, they're my heroes as well.
And we've had some of those people working in those bike shops on the show, and we'll definitely get some more in the future if all goes well. You're listening to the KBOO Radio Bike Show. All our shows are also available on bikeshow.portlandtransport.com, and we're fortunate and honored to be carried by some community radio stations in the U.S. My name is Alon Robb, and our guest in the first half of the hour is Carol Khachaturian, Executive Director of Double Tilde Core Collaborative. Tell us, please, about this organization, and I'm curious about the name because it means approximation, double negative. I know double negative is positive, but isn't there already enough negativity in the world? Why do we need more negativity in your name here?
Yeah, I don't think of it as negative. I think of it as tilde, as you pointed out, means sort of approximately or getting closer. And double means that we're getting even closer.
Okay.
So the goal is to get even closer to a good transportation system that has a great walking and biking network. So CORE stands for Community Outreach, Research, and Education, and that's kind of what I do, what we do here.
And how did the organization start? Do you feel like there were no other organizations doing it and this was a real need that had to be filled?
Certainly there are organizations that work on older adult wellness, Blue Zone, and Blue Zone works on, you know, wellness and good living all over. AARP does the work. The work that I do really started with the 50-plus cycling survey in late 2017. I was working for a bicycle and pedestrian transportation company, and I developed the survey because I wanted to develop a practice area on older adult mobility. I did that for several years, and in 2019, I was named the practice lead. And then in early 2020, COVID caused that organization to contract, and I was able, because of that contraction, to start my own nonprofit and do the work that I do, and really do a lot of research and thinking in ways that is different from what a lot of work on older adults is about. For example, you had asked me about this study I did of nature and cycling for older adults. And you don't often see that being done. I recently, last year, completed a study of older adults who cycle and whether or not they use public transit, and how does public transit and the access to stations or stops, the bike racks on buses, the holding devices on trains, elevators, how well does that serve the need of older adults? So those are kind of... Somebody once described it as under the radar work, which I think is really important.
And the survey, how is it conducted? Who participates? And also, I'm wondering about, you know, the terminology. Obviously, you also point out in, you know, some of the literature about some, you know, perceptions of people a certain age, pretty sometimes negative images. I'm wondering why 50, and how's the survey conducted, and what have you found?
Yeah, so quickly, why 50? Well, AARP membership starts at 50. Mm. And we group people in 5-year, except for the first one, which is 50 to 55, 5-year age groups. And so it allows us to see what changes may happen over time as you age. And you have to start someplace. 65 seems a little bit too late to start. The survey for the first 5 years was promoted online with a lot of state and local organizations. AARP promoted it. The American Planning Association promoted it. I want to say the League of American Bicyclists did, and other local organizations. The reports of the third year was published by the Mineta Transportation Institute, and so they began promoting the survey and actually publishing the report. And I'm actually working on the Year 5 report now, which they will publish. So it's not a survey. We don't have a sample size that we're targeting. We ask people who are 50 or older, regardless of the level that they cycle, regardless of how much they cycle. They may have just started biking again. We invite them to complete the survey because their voice is important. Mm.
And what has the survey shown? I mean, who cycles? Does it vary by state, gender, economic status?
Yeah, I can tell you that more men probably bike than women. We have more men responding to the survey. Certainly, there are a number of people that continue to cycle as they age. There's a group in Canada called the Royal Canadian Oxygenarian Cyclist that really, in the Air Force survey, we had a lot of responses from people over 80. And so we find that people that are cycling at 50, about a quarter of them expect to continue cycling. They can't envision a time when they would not cycle. They adapt their cycling as I have done. I'll be 73 next month.
Mazel tov.
Thank you. to their life circumstances, where they live, if they have someone to cycle with, the type of bike that they feel comfortable riding, the places that they ride, the time of day that they cycle. If the goal is to continue to cycle because it's an important part of your life, people will find a way to do that and to continue to cycle. Hmm. Having said that, there are a number of people that complete the survey who have limitations physically, mentally, mm-hmm. and in terms of their circumstances that are not able to continue cycling. And so hopefully many of them do something else to remain physically active. But the challenge is if they don't cycle, they stop driving, they lose some independent mobility. If they don't cycle and they don't do something else, their overall well-being will begin to decline. Hmm. And that's not good. So a lot of what we do at Double-Tailed Core is to create awareness about the importance of remaining physically active as you age, and helping planners and engineers understand that importance and how it affects older adults. Mm.
And of course, e-bikes have, I have a few friends and neighbors who are over 50, over 70 even, and they're serious cyclists, but they bought an e-bike, and I have a neighbor who's probably 87, still goes up those hills in my neighborhood in Northwest Portland. So but definitely e-bikes have helped a lot of people. So to increase the number of older adult cyclists, you said you work with agencies, give talks. What does the work involve?
My goal, I make a lot, I do research. I write papers, I present at conferences, I'm on radio shows such as this one. I have webinars to present my work. And my goal is to change the way planners, engineers, advocates, policymakers think about older adults and cycling and the built environment that will either support or dissuade older adults from continuing to cycle. So I always ask at the beginning of my presentations and at the end of them, has this changed the way you think about things? That's the simplest way mm-hmm. of putting it.
And from my conversations with people who cycled and stopped because of age, a lot of them mention, you know, it's not safe, my reactions aren't so fast, some of them. And, of course, if we had more protected lanes, you know, that would definitely give a lot of people of all ages a sense of security. You know, your work is of interest to me because I've circled the sun more than 50 times, and I play soccer every week, and I'm older than most people over there by 40 years at least. And it took a while for me to adjust to the fact that I'm not a star anymore. I'm not as quick. My ego is a little bruised, but I make up for not being the best player on the field by my great knowledge of the game, of many, many decades, my love of the game, and being very tenacious on the field, never giving up. But it's been an interesting process, so I could definitely relate to what you're saying about aging and, you know, how others view us and also how we view ourselves. That's they're both of them are great challenges.
They certainly are, and I think as people age, oftentimes they change what they expect to get out of cycling. Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of men that what I learned from the survey, as they age, they want to continue to cycle that 50 miles at a time. It's mm-hmm. like a competition with the men that they cycle with. But a lot of other people say, you know, I don't need to go as fast. Mm-hmm. Maybe I get a trike. Maybe I get an e-bike. It's the pleasure of being on the bike and being outside cycling. Mm-hmm. It's not the distance or the speed. Mm-hmm. And so that's a wonderful thing, to just find a new way to enjoy cycling as you age.
Mm-hmm. Our time has just flown by. We have about a minute or two, and I guess I want to know what's next for your organization and for you personally, where people can find out more about your work. And also, since these are such challenging times, such difficult times, what gives you hope and strength these days?
Yeah, I think what gives me hope and strength is the knowledge that there are a lot of people that are dedicated to creating a rich and full life, mm-hmm. To remain physically active. And I am convinced that people will not give in and will continue to hold those values. Our innovative spirit is always there. We certainly saw it during COVID, the ways that people were able to have to thrive during COVID. I recognize all the people that died, but I think that we will come out of this eventually, and innovation will help. We'll be part of it.
From your mouth to the ear of God or the goddess or the universe or our listeners, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. And for people who want to find out more about your work, the research you've done, where can they find the information?
The easiest way is to go on the website, dbltildecore.org.
Okay, and on our Portland Transport site, will have a connection to it. So thank you so much, and ride safely and continue doing this important work.
I will. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, much appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you.
You are listening to the KBOO Radio Bike Show, broadcasting live from Portland, Oregon on 90.7 FM and streaming on KBOO.FM. All shows going back to 2001 are archived on www.bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. We have been speaking with Carol Khachaturian, Executive Director of Double Tilde Core Collaborative. And we will take a short musical break. When we return, Nedra will speak with Daniel Cheney and Joshua Funches, leaders of the National Youth Bicycle Council. And our song today is Steve Miller's band, Fly Like an Eagle, a new version of it performed by the Playing for Change band, which is comprised of musicians from across the globe. Stay tuned.
We were just listening to Play for Change Band playing their version of Steve Miller Band's Fly Like an Eagle. In the first half hour of the show, Alon was speaking with Carol Kachadarian, Executive Director of Double Tilde Core Collaborative. And I'm Nedra Deadweiler, and I will speak with Daniel Cheney and Joshua Funches of the National Youth Bike Council today. So thank you, and welcome on, Daniel and Joshua. Are you here?
I'll get Joshua.
Okay. I will
be here. Thank you.
Both. Daniel Cheney is a student at Georgia Tech studying computer science. He joined the council in 2024 and is the new president of the National Youth Bicycle Council. Daniel continues to advocate for increased mobility for all and is also an advocate for Atlanta Beltline's version for light rail. Joshua Funches is the current board chair and was the first president and co-founder of the National Youth Bike Council. His advocacy influenced the inclusion of youth involvement in transportation advocacy across sectors. He founded and hosts the annual Youth Bike Summit, bringing together over 200 passionate young people who love cycling. So let's begin. Who's here?
We are.
Okay, great. I'm very glad to have you here. Looking forward to hearing more about your advocacy and the influence that you have been able to exert with the Bike Council. And before we get started and into it, we would love to have you share with our audience, who are you? So a little bit more about yourself and what motivates you to ride a bicycle.
Yeah, of course.
With either of you.
Yeah, this is Joshua, but Daniel, are you with us too?
I haven't reached him yet.
Okay.
All right.
So we'll go ahead and get started, Joshua. When Daniel comes on, we'll just give him some time to introduce himself.
Got it. Yeah, for myself, I started learning about bicycling when I went to our Earn a Bike program. I assume you're familiar with the Earn a Bike programs, right?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Very familiar.
Yeah. I guess,
you can share more about what is Earn a Bike program, just for those who are in the audience who may not know.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So for those that don't know what Earn a Bike program is, I like to describe it as a way for any young person to come into a bicycle shop and earn a bike for free. Usually it's twice a week that they come into the bicycle shop. It's usually an 8-week program, and they get like a bicycle that's broken up or broken down or not fully taken care of or maybe not giving it some love, and then they give that bike some love over like the course of 8 weeks, learning how to fix it part by part, and then at the end, of course, they get to keep the bike for free. So that was how I got introduced. I did that program in the Philadelphia area with one of my brothers. We went through it together. We both walked away with two really nice bicycles that we knew how to fix. And then from there, I kind of just kept going through a lot of the different programs that they had there. They had like a race team. They had like something called like a Kneg Sculpture Derby, which was really neat. I don't think they do that anymore in the Philadelphia area, but it was really nice. It was like a big event that happened every single year, and people brought out their bicycles. And as weird as it sounds, they kind of rode it through the mud. And then after that, of course, I also took part in like one of their youth council programs. I just like to ride the bicycle specifically because I lived in the suburbs, so it was really nice to just get outside and try to explore the neighborhoods that was near me or another one like my own just by bicycle. And it was super hilly, so I got lots of like training and time on the bicycle.
Thanks for sharing. About like how you got maybe bike as an older teen exploring, getting around through the Earn a Bike program. How did you learn to ride a bike?
I think there's a video actually. I have to probably find it, but it was like, I remember I was probably like 6 or 7. I remember my brother was riding the bicycle. We were on a boardwalk. I don't remember which boardwalk it was, but you can imagine any East Coast boardwalk. And he was riding his bicycle, and in the video, if it wasn't for this video, I would not remember, actually. But in the video, I was, like, just begging to get on the bike and to ride the bike because he obviously had gotten the hang of it, and I didn't get the hang of it, so I really wanted to get the hang of it. Now, the bicycle was way too large for me, and so I don't think on that day I learned how to ride the bike, but usually about once or twice a year, there was an event that I had went to with my church, and they had bicycles there. So it was really neat to just hop on and try to figure out how to learn it. And then we would just literally ride around the block, just keep riding and riding and riding around the block.
Very cool. It's something about, I'm an older sibling, and so whether you're the older or the younger, that whole push-pull around, I'm going to do what you want to do, and come on, do what I want to do, it's really cute. So I'm wondering, I'm really curious about you learned how to ride, then you did an Earn a Bike program, and now you're this huge advocate. How did you make that jump, from riding and getting more experience to, okay, now I'm going to advocate for this for people who are my age and also get more
Can you hear me?
Who are my age involved. Yeah. Go ahead, Joshua.
Are you still with me?
Yes. Can you hear me? But I didn't hear you. Did you give an answer? Sorry about this. We're having a little bit of technical difficulty. You are listening to KBOO Bike Radio. We are streaming on live on www.
Nice.
Bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. You can hear all shows. They're archived there, and you can listen through each month. First of the month, we have a show. So currently, we are talking to Joshua Funches of the National Youth Bicycle Council, and hopefully we'll be joined with his co-leader, Daniel Cheney. Joshua.
Yeah, so can you hear me now?
I can hear you. I can hear
Perfect.
You now.
Yeah, I heard your question about the, like, you know, how did it go from just riding the bicycle originally to being involved in the advocacy work?
Yeah.
I honestly, it's a really long story, but honestly, there's lots of twists and turns. So it really did start with the first youth council that I was a part of, like in the bike shop that I went to in Philadelphia. Their idea was that, you know, this youth council would serve as the voice for young people at the bike shop. So they wanted to figure out, like, how do we improve the program? How do we make it more interesting for other young people to get involved and stay around and stick around and stuff? And at the time, we had moved from one location to a newer location, which they're probably still at today, on Lancaster Avenue. And during that time, we kind of watched the transition, and we got a chance to be a part of, like, some of the conversations in reference, like, you know, who some of the newer executive directors would be. And it was a really interesting process for me to see, like, you know, the transition there. And honestly, a lot of the advocacy that I decided to do or got involved with related to bicycling was less when I was riding the bicycle, even more when I saw what the bicycle was used for. So, for example, like, I remember I was like, and this is just one of many scenarios, because it was always so awesome to see the community gather around bicycling or how they did it. But there was this one young man he was probably like 6 years younger than me at the time, but he was very hands-on, and he liked to learn. He liked to, like, you know, put the wrench to the bicycle. And I saw him biking outside one time with him and a lot of his friends, except for I think he was the only one that had the bicycle or something like that. And then I had caught him one time in the bike shop, and I asked him, I was like, hey, so what are you working on? And he told me he was working on a bicycle. I said, what are you going to do with it? He said, I'm going to sell it. And I was like, all right. And I was kind of laughing to myself, because in the prior past, he actually tried to steal my phone. So I was like, all right, at least he's using his time and energy for something good. And then fast forward a few weeks, like, I had walked out the bike shop again, and all of a sudden, like, him and the rest of his buddies, they're all, like, wheeling down the street. And I thought to myself, like, that's such a great use of his time. And not only did he say he was going to do it, but he actually did it. Because I remember they didn't have a bicycle at one point, but he was, like, their bike provider. Like, he helped provide them with bicycles. And I just thought that was so neat. And it really helped. Like, at the time, I was also, like, the youth council president at the bike shop. So it was just so nice to see that, like, the work wasn't going to naught. Like, he was using his skills for something great, and he was clearly putting it to better use of his own time. And that's just one example of why I really enjoy, like, giving this tool or the opportunity or the experience of getting involved in bicycling to young people. Just one of the many. But yeah, it's all started to really shape up when I realized how much youth development progress there can be when it comes to bicycling and getting young people involved and giving them something to do.
Yes, I mean, explaining how you got involved and what some experiences that you had is really interesting, especially as it overlays with youth development and this, like, natural thing that everyone goes through as they go from little kid to, you know, an older teen or older, younger adult. And so, I mean, you've talked a lot about youth council and some of those experiences. Could you just kind of go into a little bit of a description of what is the National Youth Council and who is there, and yeah, what is the work and mission of the National Youth Council?
Sure, yeah, I definitely can. And I'm also going to differentiate, or I guess like separate the description between the two. The youth council that I was on at the bike shop, that's different from the National Youth Bike Council. The youth council that I was on there, that was first where I started. Like, that's, I did, like, you know, their programs, I was a part of what I was. And then one day, you know, you just start asking a lot of questions, and at least I was asking a lot of questions, and I ended up helping found the National Youth Bike Council. That was a few of us who went to the Youth Bike Summit. So a stipulation for being on that youth council at the bike shop was that we had to go to the Youth Bike Summit. And the Youth Bike Summit, to correct you there, actually, we didn't, you know, I didn't found that. That was founded by other organizers who are also passionate about Earn a Bike programs and things of that nature. They founded that, and I had attended it for the first time in 2015. And that's like a three-day conference where a bunch of young people are getting together, staff members, organizers, teachers, and they even had, you know, they even had politicians as well speaking at some of these events. So I went there for the first time, saw quite a lot, especially like the need for more cohesiveness between the organizations, like youth voice needs. And that was like, we just started having ideas, and one of the ideas that we had out of everything that we spoke about during that 2015-2016 event was the National Youth Bike Council. So that's why our organization did not get started until 2017, and since then we've morphed into a bunch of different forms, but ultimately we decided that it's, you know, our mission to provide an active learning space so that other young people can learn through the bicycle, and specifically through peer leadership. So today, instead of just being like this youth council as we originally kind of formed to just get young people together, we specifically want to support organizations like that bike shop that I had came from to help them to do their work and do it better. So the Youth Bike Summit was something that kind of started that mission, and now we fast forward a few years, and the Youth Bike Summit is something now that we're running since 2022.
Ned, are you there?
Yes, I'm sorry. I had myself on mute. I just want to say thank you, Joshua, for sharing how those two organizations are intertwined and also their beginning. I have experienced a youth bike summit, and I found it real interesting and fascinated at how it's organized. It seems to function a lot on consensus and sort of what are the workshops are going to be about, who is going to, and who and how the process of leading those workshops, that it is highly collaborative, and that each young person has opportunity to voice concern or share knowledge, or, you know, to offer that support. So
were you at one of the Youth Bike Summits?
Yes, I was at New York in 2019, I believe it was. And
oh, wow, yeah.
One here in Atlanta, yeah.
All right, wow, yeah, you went to some of the ones in the recent past, yeah. Those were pretty good. I think New York, I was at that one. I didn't make it to the one in Atlanta, but we actually had some National Youth Bike Council members there, since at that time we had already formed. It was actually around that time that the organizers at that time had just kind of got stifled by the pandemic. So it was prime time to start to figure out how to sunset the movement. So since our organization was rising up at that time, that was a perfect time for us to look back and be like, this is something that we started. This is where we started. And we didn't want to see that particular part of the movement going down. So we had to skip 2023. And yeah, 2024, last year, we held the first Youth Bike Summit that was organized by our organization.
Okay. So is there similarities, differences in this new Youth Bike Summit?
Similarities, same name. nothing in reference to the name change. Another similarity, the purpose of the Youth Bike Summit is really to give young people, put them in leadership roles, decision-making roles, or facilitating roles. At the Youth Bike Summit in 2019, actually, we had the first thing called Youth Only Space. So that was an idea that the National Youth Bike Council put on. We were there, we talked to the organizers, we said, hey, we want to have this space just for young people, just for young people. In a nutshell, it worked really great. We were really just kind of, we did an icebreaker, like one of those popular icebreakers where you have like a ball of yarn and you throw it to another person and you try to see like how you have something similar with them, like any form of connection or whatever. It was really nice. And then some differences is that we're starting to see a lot of opportunity to work on year-over-year growth. That's one of the main things. The Youth Bike Summit has had amazing impact. But that impact hasn't always been very well displayed. So we're really excited from viewing like our analytics from last year and from this year, where this year we had it in Boston, and we partnered with two organizations compared to usually doing one organization to help put that on, and that was, you know, majorly successful. It was really nice to see the teamwork, the outcome, and then, of course, one of the other differences, too, is that we're trying to make sure that we have a really great video that comes out of every single summit that we have to really showcase, like, all the different young people that come, the diversity. And I'd have to say, since the Youth Bike Summit has started, it's always been such a great, diverse event, really bringing together a lot of young people and folks from all different places and spaces.
Yeah. What does it mean to increase your membership? How does that work? And what effort are you putting in to grow the movement and getting more people involved? Is it connecting and building more partnerships? Is it, getting out grant dollars, more technical assistance? What does the process look like to get more young people involved in bicycling advocacy?
Yeah, that's a great question. The Youth Bike Summit is always going to be a main component of what will run and help fuel the movement. An opportunity for people to get together, as I'm sure you can imagine, is always powerful, especially for movements that are growing or they start to ask better questions, they start to get a better idea of what's going on. So one of our roles that we're going to play is really going to be making sure that the voice of the movement is cohesive. We've had a lot of great ideas. There's been a lot of great, like, things kind of put up on the wall that people want to get a chance to, like, you know, take down that sticky note and start working on it. That's our job, to make sure that we can keep those sticky notes, top of mind. More collaboration is another thing that we want to do. I think we want to do that, but we're already doing that. A lot of great conversations happen at the Youth Bike Summit, and then everyone kind of leaves, goes back home with all these exciting ideas, and then sometimes nothing ever happens. I'm sure, as you can imagine, that's probably happened to you if you've ever attended a summit. So we're currently working on ways to bridge that gap with doing things like webinars all the time, or quarterly connections for all the folks in the organizations, a part of the different organizations. In reference to the youth themselves, we're super excited to explore in 2026 a new model for how we recruit youth council members. Youth council members, kind of today, they're recruited directly through like an interview process or something like that. But in the future, we're hoping to explore like more journalism, more youth voice, and more submissions from young people related to how they feel about bicycling, some things that they're interested in transportation related. So I guess more on that in our own newsletter. So shout out to that one. And then, of course, in reference to some of the stuff that we're also working on, this is also kind of new. One of the bigger problems that a lot of these organizations have is, and whether it's an organization or like a mom and pop setup, some folks want to get involved. Some folks want to start their own program. Some folks don't really know how to do that. Bringing that barrier to entry very low, like as low as possible. I believe that if we had that barrier of entry lower during COVID, we would have seen more earner bike programs, or we would have seen more mom and pop setups. Of course, during 2020 to 2022, there were a few great initiatives that had popped up, and some of them are actually thriving right now. And a lot of them were organic. But again, a lot of them, if they didn't know nobody, they had to do things from scratch. Or if they knew like only one person, they got like a one-sided perspective on how to start their program, and they still had to figure out a lot of the same issues or scenarios that a lot of these bike programs go through. And maybe they didn't even know about the Youth Bike Summit as a way to like connect with other organizers. So we want to keep the conversation flowing, get folks together, and then provide like a centralized location where they can get all the resources that they need.
Oh yeah, that's a lot of work, and it's really powerful too. We have time for maybe two more questions, and it looks like in terms of the work of the council is also collaborating not only nationally but also internationally with the Global Youth Coalition for Road Safety. How is that, I guess, intertwined in the work that is done with the council?
Yeah, that's an organization that supports other organizations at home. So we actually are called, National Youth Bike Council. And so, yeah, the majority of our work does stay based here in the U.S. It's an informal relationship. We mainly do work here. We don't do work elsewhere. I do find it funny, though, because at one point there was folks that we knew in Europe that were asking us, like, hey, can we bring the Youth Bike Summit to Europe? And that was a very interesting question to ask. And I think that they were basically just saying, like, they love the movement, love the idea, and would like to see something like that successfully deployed somewhere else. So who knows? Maybe one day we'll have to hit them up and ask if they can help us bring it to Europe.
Yeah, I mean, that would be great. I think having young people really involved in leadership and planning and developing those skills early on, it's really wonderful. And also building in that sort of team support, like that collaborative nature, it's something that will take you really far. And it's great to be grounded in that. I also love that that is embedded in the framework are the SDGs, the UN Sustainable Development Goals, such as sustainable cities and communities, quality education, climate action, and for HADAP to be a part of the foundation for the council and the Youth Bike Summit.
Yeah,
and especially now with designations such as child-friendly cities, have you been able to see, adults responding to you all, to the council and the work that you do with strong support?
Yeah, of course. Actually, we think about that all the time. We're thinking about, like, what are some things that maybe adult organizations are saying or what they might have issues with, and what solutions, can we as, like, a younger demographic provide in many different ways. As I'm sure, depending on who you're talking to, if you're talking about the bicycle industry, sometimes you're talking about an industry that moves a lot slower than others, especially in reference to getting fully engaged with providing like the top tier service for young people. Like if you think about bicycling compared to another mode of transportation, or if you think about bicycling in reference to another mode of like sport, or if you think about bicycling related to career, there's lots that are competing for young people's time and attention. And so providing that extra perspective on what we believe is a way to approach that time and attention portion to getting toward young people. Like some things that we have organizations say to us is like, our work is too broad. Like they might come to us and say like, hey, like we feel like our work is too broad. It doesn't touch enough young people. Or they say they don't have enough staff members to really run a youth program. Or they might say, oh, I don't know how to engage a young person. Or they might even say like, oh, I'm not sure what young people are interested in. These are things that we feel like we can help resolve and answer specifically through our webinars. We have a webinar coming up soon anyways that's going to be about how to effectively engage young people in bicycling. So we plan on presenting about that, I think, sometime in November, which, again, all in anything that we can do to help spread the word around how to get more young people on bicycles. And if I ever had an ask, I would definitely be like, we are looking for very strong board members or passionate board members that are willing to learn. Again, the mission is really all about improving youth development through bicycling. The bicycle is such a diverse tool, you know. It's such a diverse tool, so it can, whether it's like the career, the exercise, or just like mental health. It's
10 seconds.
It's like throughout the work that I've done, it's
okay,
definitely
10 seconds. We got 10 seconds. Yeah, we got 10 seconds, Joshua. I just want to say thank you for being here. And
you're listening to KBOO Portland.
There we go.
Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7